Hello, this is Carrie Weber, Associate Editor for America Magazine. This week, we're talking with Gabriel Bol Deng, who fled his village of Ariang in southern Sudan after he was attacked by militiamen from northern Sudan when he was only 10 years old. Unable to find his family, he journeyed for 4 months, a trek which included crossing miles of desert, being chased by a lion, and avoiding crocodiles in the Nile, before finally landing in a refugee camp in Ethiopia. He learned English in the camp and also spent time at a refugee camp in Kenya before coming to the United States in 2001 under the Refugee Resettlement Program. In 2007, he graduated from Lemoyne in Syracuse, New York, where he studied math education. That year, he also returned to his home village and reconnected with some of his remaining relatives. While there, he noticed that the children of the village were in need of a permanent structure for a school and decided to do what he could to help. He founded the nonprofit Hope for Ariang to help with this project, and we recently spoke with Gabriel about his life story and his work at the Ignatian Family Teach-In in Washington, D.C. Gabriel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, I wonder if we could start talking a little bit about some of your memories from your childhood. You had to flee from the Sudan when you were 10 years old.
What came before that I flee was happiness, because I was so happy, had my family, had my community. Life was easy because two of my parents were there to take care of me. And what was so instrumental from the earlier years is the development and the investment, I mean, that my parents had in me, trusting me to look after their cows, instilling me the values that they thought would be very important later on in my life. And like any other 10-year-old child, a boy or a girl, I took my parents at the face value, and I thought they were really crazy. But I think they were really good parents. They never give up on me. And I think they knew that through their experience that life is full of obstacles. And therefore, I think in their mind and in their hearts, they were trying to prepare me for what will come.
And can you talk a little bit about some of those obstacles that you did go through?
Yeah, well, there were several obstacles. First of all, being attacked in the grazing field, running back home, met two people on the way, and one of the men shot dead in front of me. I played dead in order not to be killed. Then I have to get up and run home. The houses were on fire. My family was not home, so I lose hope of finding them. And then I ran away. Then had the obstacles was to climb the tree to escape being eaten by a lion, crossing the Nile, avoiding a crocodile. I was almost bitten by a crocodile. So there were so many that I can go on, go on. But I think, as I said in my presentation, that what kept me going was the very value education that my parents gave me. And when I almost gave up, I remember what my parents told me, that in life there are mountains and all I need to do is to have hope, have faith, and continue to make good decisions, and I would survive.
Eventually you came to the United States and you started working on your education. Tell us a little bit about what you found challenging during that process and what you found inspiring.
By the time I came here, I was 21 years old. And having experienced what I have gone through, I think taught me the lesson and made my adjustment or life adjustment here in the United States is very easy. But there were some of the challenges, like weather has been one of the challenges, driving in snow, and other challenges, learning English too, because though when I came I speak English, but I had to work hard to soften my accent, work on my writing skills, and even his speaking skill. But again, I use the same values that my parents taught me, that when I have positive attitude and when I work hard, then there's nothing that I could not overcome. Or they would always say that when I put my mind into anything, then I could move that mountain, I could solve that problem. So it would have been different if I would have just come from the village without have gone through the experience. And the experience taught me more. And as they say goes, that experience is their best teacher. So the experience I have gone through for being in a refugee camp for 13 years really taught me. And by age 21, I was a more resilient, a more hardworking working person. So, and that really helped when I came here. I know what I went. What I went was education. It would have not been easy. Though I was proficient in English, it was the learning American syllabus. It was also a challenge. So I have to adjust. I have to read harder than an average student. But again, as my parents used to say, life is full of so many obstacles. There are ups and downs. So though I have a college degree, there are still ups and downs in my life. But I always have to remain positive and resilient and try the best I can to move the mountains until my time come to leave the earth.
And you chose to study math education and philosophy. What motivated you to pick those topics?
Personally, I'm mathematics. I'm good at math. I'm good in standing in front of people. And also, I thought, how can I make a difference? And there's no other way to touch somebody's life than really being in the classroom and teach the kids and change their life in a way that make them a wonderful citizen, hardworking and productive citizen. So I have both the strength to be able to stand. I have the courage to stand in front of people. And then I like to teach. Even way back when I was in the camp, I was with other young boys. So I pretend to be a teacher. So I teach them math. I taught them math and sciences. So I think I have a natural tendency to be comfortable in front of people. I felt if I'm teaching somebody something, then I feel that I'm making a difference.
Now, you went back to your hometown in 2007. What made you decide to go back, and how was it very difficult? Was it very joyful? What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was a very difficult decision, but when I got my approval letter to come to the United States, I didn't want to come to the U.S. because I thought that coming to the U.S. would elongate my probability of which I would go back to see my parent or look for my parent if peace prevail in southern Sudan. But I came decided to take the option of coming to the U.S. because I thought that had been reading a lot about America, the land called the land of opportunities, and that if I come to U.S. here, I would get an education. So I divide my thinking into two, that Gabriel, who would remain in a refugee camp, and when peace come, I would just cross the border and go deep into southern Sudan and hunt down where my family is or where my family are, or Gabriel, who would come to the U.S., with the possibility that I would have a higher education, I will have a good education, and then now I will go back. So the Gabriel who come to U.S. will be educated person. I will be more helpful to my family. I will be more helpful to my community. But what took me back was the question of what had become of my family. Where my parents alive? Who is in my family is alive? So at that point, as of 2007, I felt as if I was an incomplete human being. And I will not be a complete happy human being until I find out what happened to my family, especially my mom and my dad, and that took me back. Part of it was really to find a closing chapter of my story. Now, after I went, I found two brothers. My parents were killed during the war, but I have two brothers now. I have a nephew and nieces. So I'm happy, and I'm more happy, more complete human being. And now I can answer anything about my family. Now I feel content that I know what happened to my family, I know what happened to my dad, and now I have siblings. So it makes me more rounded, more happy person, because I know I have family, I have brothers and sisters and their children.
Now, when you went back, you also saw a lot of students outside learning under a tree without a permanent educational facility, and that motivated you to start working towards providing those things for the people in your hometown. Can you tell us a little bit about how that started?
My first mission was to return to the village, and the goal was to look after to make sure I find out what happened to my family. And then I saw young kids going to school, walking barefooted to school, walk on foot 3 to 2 hours coming to the schools. And when they come to the school is under the tree. And they asked me that, is there a way I could help them to transform their learning from under the tree to a more modest facility? I did not promise them. What I say by then was, after I spoke to them under the tree, I told them that I have seen that their determination. All those kids, when I see them, when I saw their eyes, they want better education. And better education will make them a better productive citizen of the country, of the village. Therefore, I determined that I will do whatever it takes to help them have a better education. But the turning point, when I came here, I could not sleep for a couple of days thinking about all the problems in the village. Girls were not coming to the school because they had to get water in the morning. Kids don't have a school during the rainy season. And I began to ask myself, that do I have a human obligation to try to help this kid in the village? Or should I just accept full-time job in Syracuse School District and just have a good salary and have a happy life, live an American dream? Or the other question was that, which was the turning point of why I decided to take on the challenge of trying to build a school. I asked myself that, had my parents survived the war and had I met them in the village, would they have accepted my offer to come back, for me to go back in the village and leave them out of the suffering and bring them here in the U.S. so that they can live in this wonderful country? But I knew, and I know now, that my parents, especially my mom and my dad, they would have not accepted me to take them from the village out of the suffering and bring them and enjoy life here. They would have challenged me to do whatever I can to make sure that I improve the lives of everyone in the village before I take them. And that was really so the turning point, because my parents always used to tell me that how much I worth as a human being is not measured by how much money or how much material wealth I have, but my human worth is measured by how much I give back to the community, to my fellow human being, and how my action and my attitude affect another human being. And if they always want my action to be positive so that people will feel that I'm helpful to them. And that's really the key, and that is really my mission. My mission is just to do whatever I can to help other people, and that is really the mission that I'm working on.
Now, you had your parents with you for such a short amount of time, but the impact that they made on your life and the lives that they led seemed like they were such an inspiration for you. Some people don't experience that, having their parents with them their entire lives.
They were really very good parents, and I never seen them angry at anybody or quarrel with any neighbors. Every time I go back in the village, and when I met somebody who was a friend of my father, who was a friend of my mom, they always say that, oh, your mom is such a wonderful wonderful mother and all this. And they were really very good teachers. And I think as a parent, they invested in me and teaching me, giving me the wisdom. Though the time was short, they have so much influence in my life.
Now, do you ever get tired of talking about it? Do you ever feel like you just want to, you know, sort of move forward and not think about all the struggles that you went through or all of the challenges that you faced? Or is this something that is, you know, life-giving or inspiring to you as well?
A couple of years ago when I came to the U.S., it was very hard in the beginning that I went to keep it to myself. At some point I decided that would be too much selfish of me that I have gone through, and now I better use it to teach other children, to teach other kids, or teach other people, inspire them. And that is really why I start sharing my story. Two reasons why I share my story. Number one is there is war going on around the world and in Sudan. And I find myself that I could be an advocate for those whose their voice are not heard in the U.S. here, and put my life in their perspective when I talk to people, put it into the perspective what is it like when the war happened. When war happened, people died, especially kids, mothers and fathers died. And when I speak to the kid, it put them in the perspective when they see that here there is war in Africa. I hope they would relate to my story. And therefore, they will feel sympathy. And when they feel sympathy for me and for the kids suffering in Sudan and around the world, then they will begin to do action. Personally, I believe that there's no social justice without social action. And my goal would be to evoke and inspire people to use their social action in order to promote a more just and more equitable world. And then the other thing, that the other reason why I start sharing my story, was that we all human beings. We all have our mountains. And I hope that when I speak in schools or at conferences, or anywhere that I speak, I hope that when somebody, a boy or a girl, a woman, or whenever they heard my story, and if they go back home or wherever they live, there might be a day in their life that they might have obstacles, and they might be confused, they might want to give up, but I hope that probably that they may be able to remember that I was in this conference, or Gabriel spoke in our school or in our church, and be able to remember the obstacles that I have gone through and what I have done to overcome them. And then he would say, if Gabriel was able to overcome the mountains he had overcome, then they are also going to overcome the mountain in their life. And that is really the two main reasons: to inspire people, to awaken their conscience about the war, and then use their God-given talents, their ability, their critical skills, to try to influence either our leaders or here in the U.S. to listen to them and be able to find a solution to a particular problem in the world, either a genocide in Darfur or a war going on in Nuba Mountain or anywhere in Africa or around the world where there is war. I believe that when we work collectively, we can make change anywhere, regardless of where we are. And I hope the people who listen to me could also join me and join other people to join our social action in order to promote a more just society.
It's a wonderfully unitive vision, and it's interesting because I think sometimes people in this country can, myself included, tend to worry or complain about things that seem a little bit small or insignificant, especially compared to some of the things you've gone through or compared to the larger things in the world going on right now. Do you ever get annoyed when you hear people complaining about things and you're just like, come on, you weren't chased by a lion today, you're doing okay, you know?
No, I think there's a part of human nature, so people complain, so nothing I could do. But I could talk to them and put it into their perspective. Like even what was so touching this evening was that one of the students came to me and he was really crying, was so choked up, and he said that he was thinking through when I was speaking, and he came to the conclusion that he was even a part of this problem. And now he's going, as I said, that when, as my parents used to say, that when you have a problem, all I need to do is to stop us and stop blaming others. And this young man came to me and he said, yeah, he's going to stop blaming others now, blaming his parents or professors, and then see himself as a part of the problem. For me, that is the biggest paycheck, when my story enabled people to discover that they are part of their own problems and be able to work towards solving that problem. That is really the bigger paycheck that I love and this inspire people. But in human nature, people complain. And one of the things I learned from this, when people, when they listen to me, they thought that after listening to me, they say, oh, Gabriel has been complaining about this and blah, blah. And now they're not going to complain anymore. Like, for example, when kids in middle schools, I spoke there and I was talking about the importance of the parents, about the importance to listen to our parents, to our grandparents, and to our friend. And she wrote to me that she used to feel bad when she did something wrong and her parents sent her to the room as a punishment she feels that her parents are really bad and all this, and she feels like running away from the house, from home. But after she listened to me and what they have gone through, that she doesn't want to run away anymore. So that is a big deal. So that is really, those small story made my day, and again, it make me feel I'm making a difference in other people's lives.
I guess that's all we can ask for. Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you and to hear your talk. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.